This meeting of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability is called to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Burr?
Here.
Senator Frerich?
Here.
Senator Taylor?
Here.
Senator Murphy? Representative Nicklin?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Here.
Representative Riley? Senator Rose?
Yes.
Senator Severson?
Here.
Representative Tracy? Senator Trotter? Representative Fryer?
Okay, 7 members present. Meeting is called to order. This is a subject matter hearing today dealing with discussion of requiring Medicare primary retirees, annuitants, and survivors to enroll in a state-sponsored Medicare plan. We've had several people who have filed witness slips today. I'd like to read through those before we call up our first people to present. We have John Corrigan with John Corrigan Associates, listed as no position, oral testimony, written statement filed. Tom Ryder with Illinois State Employees Association Retirees, opponent, oral testimony. Richard Carlson, Retired State Employees Association, opponent, oral testimony. Linda Brookhart, Executive Director of State University Annuitants Association, opponent, oral testimony. Trevor Klotfelter, Insurer Prize, Inc., Government Affairs Representative, opponent. Brad Donaldson, Insurer Prize, Inc., listed as proponent. I think you guys might want to revisit that. And Frank Bryant, Insurer Prize, Director of Group Sales, opponent. You guys might want to get on the same page. Or maybe you don't. Okay. First up on the agenda, CMS. Ms. Bonneville, would you like to come forward? And Rob Craddock, is he with you here today as well? If you'd like to make any statements before the commission, we'd be happy to take them, and I'm sure there will be some questions of members.
Good morning. Thank you, sir. I'm Janice Bonneville, Deputy Director for the Bureau of Benefits for Central Management Services. Traditionally, I don't have an opening statement, but I will just make a comment that we have testified with respect to this issue a number of times, so I don't want to bore the members of the committee with information they may have heard previously. What we have pending right now in the legislature is Senate Bill 1515, which simply gives us the authorization to do a procurement for the Medicare-eligible retirees without working within the complete confines of the procurement code in terms of timing. It does not request authorization to do the procurement. It simply requests authorization to work to give us some flexibility under the code. I can assure you that in the process of working on the procurement that we're currently proposing, we have worked closely with the CPO's office. In fact, I had an 8:30 conference call with them this morning regarding this procurement and regarding the need to ensure that our activities are transparent and that we can clearly show what we're doing and how we reach the conclusions we reach when that procurement is completed. The procurement as it stands right now is broad in nature. It allows vendors to bid on multiple products, a Medicare Advantage HMO product, a Medicare Advantage PPO product, and a Medicare supplement product. So all of those products are currently included in the procurement that's being worked on in my office. So hopefully that may work to quell some of the concerns that we're hearing. We moved to that kind of a procurement about 30 days ago. But without the release of 1515 from the Senate floor, we have not moved forward not knowing what our confines are under the procurement code. So with that said, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the members of the committee may have regarding this issue.
Thank you very much. I know I've heard some members, so I assume there may be some questions of CMS. So Senator Severson, is there...
I'll just do a couple quick ones, then we can hear from some of the others, I think, that had concerns. You had mentioned now you were looking at going out to bid with three different options to look at. And these are going to be, in your goal in getting those, are you quoting it as a single, with them as a single source bid? Or is a multiple or dual choice, and would that be making a difference in what your numbers would look like?
I'm not quite sure I'm following your question, sir.
If you're quoting a, if you're going to quote, if we're going to go with a single plan, let's say you can ultimately give an, as was discussed before, a single source advantage with a passive network plan. Will you have, will that come in with a better rate than if you're offering a that plan in addition to a Medigap plan or in addition to an Advantage HMO type plan? If you had three plans that you're offering, which would end up, is there economy of scale when it comes to your getting those rates?
We would anticipate that if we had just a single source plan, it would come in at a better rate. But in the instant, in the desire of transparency, the pricing is written in such a way as to ask the vendors to bid it if those other plans exist or if they do not exist. So we can clearly see the impact on the pricing if there are multiple plans as opposed to a single plan offered.
And when you mentioned under the Advantage plans, the an HMO option, a PPO option, would that PPO option include the passive network that you're talking about?
Yes, and just for the members of the committee, a passive network simply means that the member is not negatively impacted if they go to a Medicare provider who is not inside the network offered by the carrier. So under the current plan design, under Quality Care, that's the way the current plan design works. That's not the way it works on July 1. But currently, a Medicare-eligible retiree literally pays no attention to whether or not their provider is within the Cigna network. Beginning July 1, that coordination is modified, and there will be an impact on the retiree if they go out of network. The Medicare Advantage will go back to that passive network concept, and it won't make a difference whether the provider is in or out of network. The only question for the member to ask is, do you accept Medicare?
And so from a thing, part of the problem, I think, is just, it's the uniqueness of the terminology that people are used to. When you hear the term PPO, you think of an in and out of network, different coinsurance amounts, different usual customary issues, and that's different than what we're looking at here. So it's not really a true from a PPO standpoint. And when you think of Advantage, you think of almost like an HMO. So it's from a terminology standpoint, you're really designing a plan that is potentially different than what we've seen before. So it is not really a traditional PPO or a traditional Advantage plan. It's a hybrid Advantage plan that has looks like the Cigna standard open access plan. Looks almost like what we would think of the Medigap policy, but the financing is different.
Correct, and you're leveraging federal dollars. I can tell you that I was on the phone just this morning with both Kentucky and Georgia, and both of those states have this kind of a setup. The Medicare Advantage with a passive network. Georgia has multiple vendors. Kentucky has a single vendor. Both have had very positive experiences with their Medicare Advantage plans. Georgia's in its second contract right now. It's procuring right now. They've done 5 years and they're moving to their new procurement. Kentucky's been in place since 2007. And some things that they told me this morning on the phone are things that we're already doing. Things as simple as when they did their original bid, they didn't include pharmacy. So they had a separate standalone pharmacy vendor. We're including under the Medicare Advantage procurement piece. It includes the pharmacy product, so it's a Medicare Advantage plan with a pharmacy network. So the members are working with a single provider or a single carrier. So when you have situations, and we have these now under Quality Care, where a doctor orders a certain pharmacy benefit and the pharmacy benefit manager says it's not pharmacy, it's medical, and the medical benefit manager says it's not medical, it's pharmacy, and we spend some time working with both of those vendors to massage and figure out where it goes, and I'll tell you we see it mostly on infusion therapies. Those kinds of concerns go away because we're bidding these as a single product, a Medicare Advantage with a pharmacy benefit. So this, although this is a new concept, admittedly, for the state of Illinois, it's not a new concept in the public sector. It is being done in multiple places, and it's being done successfully in multiple places.
And when you look at those numbers, I guess it's trying to figure out what the cost differential is for going to, when you go to a passive network and you are giving up the advantages of having a selected network where you would get those known discounts in place, what that cost differential will be, and what, and maybe it'll come in when you have quotes with both the passive and non-passive, mm-hmm. what those differences will be. But that would be that's not normal. It's one of the advantages of having an advantage plan is you have a stricter network, which gives you some additional savings.
Correct. You would have the additional savings from that standpoint, but remember that one of the biggest advantages is you're leveraging federal money. You know, the federal government is paying money back in, and I gave this example at the hearing last week. If you have a bill that comes in at $1,000 and traditional Medicare or under the Medicare Advantage plan would pay $800 towards that, and so you have a $200 bill left. But when you move to a Medicare Advantage plan, because they're more than just fee-for-service, which is what Medicare is, it's fee-for-service. You do this service, and we pay you X amount of money, period. There's no case management. There's no care management under traditional Medicare. Under a Medicare Advantage plan, the carriers that handle these plans are very aggressive in their care management. So that $1,000 bill, because of the way they do care management, might now only be $900, but your reimbursement for Medicare is still $800. So now it's $800 out of 9 versus $800 out of 1,000. So that differential, that $100 versus $200, is savings really to the state, because the premiums for the retirees are set 1%, 2%, 2%, 4% based upon their annuity. They're not being driven by the plan design. They're being driven by the Medicare status of the retiree. So there's no additional premium for the retiree on top of these plans. It is 1% for the Medicare eligibles in fiscal year 14. Okay.
And then would the plan be, the goal would be, so the premiums are set for the retiree. Are the benefits then going to be the same when you're looking at these plans? Are your, whatever the deductible is going to be, your coinsurance is going to be, your out-of-pocket, are they going to be the same regardless of the type of plan that you're looking at?
That's the way the procurement is written right now. The current plan design is lifted out of our design and placed in the procurement, in the body of the procurement, so the vendors know that that is what our design looks like moving forward, yes.
Would there be an option of making any changes to that? So you could either have a richer plan or a lesser plan where the employee would, a retiree would pay that difference?
There are not right now in this initial procurement, but I have had conversations with retirees who would be interested in what you would call a buy-up, where they could spend additional money and buy a richer plan. At this point, given the fact that it's the 20th of May and we're trying to move something forward for the 1st of January, we're trying to get, you know, out of the gate this initial item out there to see what it's going to cost us and to see what the impact is. The other point is that keep in mind that initial bids have to be based upon a set formula or a set standard, because they can look at our claims, but really until the vendor gets involved in that care management, that could have an impact on our premiums as well. And I will tell you, again, based upon some conversations this morning, other states are seeing those as positive impacts. As the care management begins to take place in the state of Kentucky, their premium's only gone up $8 since 2007. In the state of Georgia, their premium's gone from $185 per member per month down to $147 per member per month in the last 5 years because of that care management under this plan. So they've actually seen reduction in costs for them, even over and above the reductions they experienced initially.
So from a timing standpoint, do you believe that if you're trying to hit that January 1 date, that it will be difficult to implement or build in a model where they can have buy-up options? Would that be something that you would look to add in the future?
I think it would be difficult. Yes, I'm sorry, sir. Yes, initially I think that buy-up would be very difficult to do at the outset, both from the standpoint of the procurement as well as the standpoint of the communication to the retirees. A big piece of this, and a big piece of the reason I'm concerned about the timing, you know, we can work within whatever confines we have for the procurement code. We do it all of the time. But the more time we have to talk to the retirees and explain to them, the better off we are. I can tell you that when I finish here today, I'm traveling for the last time for benefit fairs. But I and my staff have spoken to literally thousands of members over the last 3 weeks, both actives and retirees, more retirees than actives, about what the design looks like for July 1 to help them understand that change, as well as to assure them that they're going to see us again in pretty short order so we can talk them through the changes for January 1.
Now, in July 1, there's going to be automatic changes that are going to take place regarding the network issue. So there's going to be some problems that what we're doing here is not going to be affected, is not the causation of that. So
that would be correct, sir. The changes for July 1 are separate and distinct. They are not at all related to whatever this procurement ends up being for January.
And that's going to hold some penalties for some people who are not in that the right network. Is that
That is going to hold some penalties for some people if they are seeking services from out-of-network doctors. Keep in mind, that's 3.2% of our entire population. So that's a very small number, but we do have folks. And what we've been working with them on and helping them understand is if to pay attention to that number. And people are paying attention because we're getting the questions back. How do I do it? Who do I talk to? What do I do? How do I make sure? So we're getting those questions, and we've got the retirees actively engaged. And we'll continue to help them throughout this process. But
if that 3.7, if that population is going to be affected by it, that's one of the reasons why you want to move forward as quickly as possible to having that January 1 date. But we're not necessarily January 1 is the date you're shooting for. It wouldn't necessarily have to be January 1, even though if we're talking about significant savings, we want to do that as soon as possible. But if for some reason it had to be a February 1 or something, it wouldn't be the end of the world, except where there would be our savings wouldn't start kicking in until that.
Wouldn't be the end of the world. The January 1 would make the plan run consistent with federal Medicare. So if we had to have a shortened plan year, I mean, that's not impossible, but it's a little bit more difficult.
But it would be a qualifying event. So from that federal Medicare standpoint, February wouldn't be problematic from that standpoint. But
it wouldn't be problematic, but there is a catastrophic piece on the pharmacy side where depending on the cost, so the longer you delay, the less you're able both to leverage that savings for us, but also to help the retiree avoid any negative repercussions if there's a catastrophic issue from a pharmacy standpoint when you get involved with our PBM versus a PBM in the future.
Okay.
So, yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Senator Kaler.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got time to ask my question, but not time to listen to the answer. I've got to go to another committee meeting. But let me ask it, and I'll check with Dan later on to see what the answer is. So in these other states, and you're talking about looking at bids that are coming in with various different assumptions, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you'll be able to tell what combination you're looking for in terms of what the cost savings is going to be.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Do these other states do that similarly, or are they with more of a single source?
No, they did it more. They do it similarly. They didn't bid Medicare supplement products. The individuals I spoke to this morning were a bit stunned that we're even having that discussion because they don't see it. Because again, think in terms of the way we handle our Medicaid. You are leveraging federal money
right.
on a Medicare Advantage plan, and you simply aren't doing that on a Medicare supplement plan. Medicare is still paying, but there's no federal money that you're getting subsidized back to the state to cover any cost. So if it's additional money over and above your cost, that's money just coming back to you.
When will you have that compared? When are those due?
We don't have the bid on the street yet, sir. So
okay.
This is the holdup for us because we've got to understand what our procurement restrictions will be moving forward, and Senate Bill 1515 is on second reading in the Senate.
All right. I'm sorry that I have to leave, but I will definitely want to hear the results of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
As understood. Are there other questions of the Commission? Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you were out for three different things, you said. One would be an HMO, one would be a PPO. What was the third one?
A Medicare supplement or a Medigap plan.
Okay. And so you'd have Advantage PPO, Advantage HMO, and then you're also looking into Medigap.
Yes, sir. All of those are included in the procurement.
Okay.
With the Medigap, we would have to additionally do a separate and independent pharmacy piece, because Medigap doesn't include pharmacies. So what people pay for their Medigap, they pay a premium for their Medigap plan, and they pay a premium for their pharmacy plan.
In last time we met, there was some discussion about lack of coverage that was being offered to people. So if you were to proceed forward with these Medicare Advantage HMO PPOs, what are you going to put in your criteria that guarantees that someone in Charleston has a local place to go? Champaign has a local place to go. Peoria has a local place to go. And with Raymond Post sitting next to me, Springfield has a local place to go.
The member merely has to have a provider who takes Medicare.
And then that falls back on the passive network.
Yes, sir.
Then the next question is, I noticed that the copays vary under Medicare Advantage depending on what you pick. What are you going – the copays, though
– we're driving plan design.
That's okay, because the contract, as I understand it, what they asked me, or the proposed contract, what they asked me, sets deductible and copay limits. So you'll be saying – downstream to bidders that you can't be above those contract limits. Is that the idea?
That would be correct. And remember then, for Medicare retirees, the only deductible that applies to them is the plan year deductible, which for fiscal year 14 is $350. And then the coinsurance in a passive network is 90-10. We pay 90%, they pay 10%.
But the thing I'm getting at here is the bidders aren't going to come back higher than what was agreed to.
No, that's correct, estimate. Because we're going to tell them you have to price it based upon this plan design. Regardless of what we're
right.
bidding, even if we're bidding our quote-unquote normal contracts, the bidder never has the right to come back and say, well, we think you ought to do this plan design. They get the plan design we provide to them, and
then
they price it accordingly.
Would you have a situation where in Medicare Advantage – you would have several HMO offerings like we have now, or are you looking to pick one statewide and let that fall back on the passive network?
We haven't delved that deep. I can tell you that there are not Medicare Advantage HMOs in every county in the state of Illinois, which is why the Medicare Advantage PPO would be necessary. But there are certain Medicare Advantage HMOs in the state that cover only certain counties.
Okay. So you would – so are you saying then you'd have to have a mix to guarantee full state coverage?
We'd have to have the PPO to guarantee full state coverage.
Okay. So not necessarily HMO.
We may have an HMO – right. We may have an HMO option, but we would have to have the PPO to guarantee full state coverage. Which, until very recently, that was the case under the state plan. Until, well, in my tenure, so in the last 7 years, there were counties within the state of Illinois that did not have HMO coverage.
Do you have a map, or have you previously provided a map, if you did, I'm sorry, of what those counties are?
We have one. We can get it for you. It's actually on the Department of Insurance website where coverage is, but we'll make sure we get it to the commission.
Okay. I want to hear from some of the opponents if we can, Mr. Chairman, but I just have one last comment, and it's editorial, but it's offered in a cooperative spirit, I hope. Is there some website or something that explains all this in plain English that I can send my constituents to? Because to be brutally honest, this is confusing enough for us. I mean, I'm getting phone calls from people that are, you know, they're scared, they're everything. Where is the easy to explain in layman's term what you're trying to do?
It's not there yet, but I had this exact conversation with retirees down at SIUE.
Right.
If I could get through May and get through open enrollment so we can make sure people have things in place for July, then we'll be doing some modifications to our website. So we will have a page specifically dedicated to this particular issue. So we'll have frequently asked questions there, and we'll be able to provide updates on the status of the procurement within the confines of what we can share during the open procurement. But that is our intention.
Okay. I just, with everything, we get ahead of ourselves, and then in the media, and then people call with detailed questions, and it's hard to answer those questions without something like that. So I would encourage you to get, put somebody on it sooner than the end of May. Thank you.
I will.
Representative Poe.
Yeah, thank you. Just follow up, just right there real quick on what he's talking about. We got so much confusion with retirees and with the two pension bills that also talk about insurance. And then we got the 1% and the 2% that's going on. And then we're starting to talk about the Medicare Advantage or Medigap. So you can imagine how confused someone that's 80 years old at home getting information and about this selection. And like Chapin says, I'm not sure some of us aren't confused because we keep stacking things on top of each other. And like you said, the sooner we can get what's going on. But this one, and retirees is most of my phone calls. Probably if we're talking about insurance calls, I'm close to 100% of them are retirees. They're very concerned. On your savings in the Medicare Advantage, is there going to be a per month cost for their co-pays and deductibles?
It would be the same as what they pay now. So they're going to pay their premium, their 1% or, well, 1% for the Medicare folks.
Right.
The deductible is the plan year deductible of $350. And then if we went to that passive PPO network, the plan pays 90%, the member pays 10%.
And a big question is, and I read somewhere, and all the things are coming at us here, I guess what would make me happy for the phone calls I'm getting is I would like to see options rather than everybody's going to go to Medicare Advantage or me, for example. I've been paying Social Security for 55 years. I'm not sure I want to leave Medicare. But if you go to Medicare Advantage, to me that's saying I'm out of that. And then I guess the premium cost is coming up in the future. And then one other thing I didn't saw on all that mix that you guys are dealing with, then you got to deal with Obamacare coming at you. I mean, it's just getting so big and so I almost wonder if we're rushing in this maybe a year too early to where we know what's going on with all those costs coming at us. And that retiree out there is really on a fixed income. I mean, I even had a lady call me just this morning. I talked to her. And she just wants her job back. She says, I can't handle all these extra expenses. Can I come back to work where I was at? I took early retirement because the day I signed that contract, oh, yeah, your insurance is going to be there. You're going to get your COLA. She says, guess what? It looks to me like some of those things are going away. Can I come back to work? So that's the confusion we're getting out there with our people that's retired.
I can understand that. I'll make a couple of comments. First of all, I would love to have insurance out of the pension bill, but that's not under my control because it does add to confusion. I will tell you I get about every fifth question from a retiree at a benefit choice seminar is, what about this insurance thing in the pension bill? And I say, no, this is separate and distinct from that. We're not going to talk about insurance in the pension bill. Second of all, I would argue that we're behind on this Medicare piece. We should have been doing this some time ago, and we didn't. So I understand the desire for members to have choices, but again, until I can get a procurement finished, I can't tell them what those choices are. So we're just trying to get through the procurement and make a decision that meets the needs, as Senator Rose addressed and his concerns regarding, access to carriers, as well as something that is cost effective both for the state and for the member. So, we're looking at all of those options, and I will grant that timing is everything. We didn't anticipate it being the end of February, the 1st of March, before we had a union contract, but it was. We didn't anticipate a re-ratification process of that contract. So all of those things continue to stack up one on top of the other, and I know it's difficult. But at the same sense, when we're looking at a program that is, in excess of $100 million in savings in a calendar year, given the current fiscal state of the group insurance program specifically, it's very difficult to say, well, we're going to wait on that. It's our responsibility to make sure we're helping the membership understand, and that's what we're moving toward.
Well, and I guess as I look at all of our charts that we've all put together, and I look at Medicare Advantage, and I look at Medigaps and all these, as personally, if I'm looking at something like keep my Medicare with the federal government, I know what it pays. And if we can go to the Medigap Plan F that pays 100%, maybe the pharmacy you had said that question, but why wouldn't I do that instead of risking all some of these other advantages that you're telling me about in Medicare Advantage? And he's just biting his tongue. He's wanting to talk.
No, that was a specific question, but I can tell you from the labor relations perspective is when we bargain this contract, the attractiveness of the Medicare Advantage piece was that it kept plan design in-house, and that was the primary, because then there would be a guarantee on the level and the quality of benefits set forth. That was important to organized labor. To speak to your piece about how healthcare is constantly evolving, in all of our newly negotiated collective bargaining agreements, we have a provision for a joint labor management committee on health insurance. So we'll have the teachers and the cops and AFSCME and the Teamsters and all of these different groups at the table that will allow us to make mid-contract term modifications. And the goal is to create enough inertia where health insurance is just handled in that forum, and then at the master bargaining table, we can deal with the wages and other terms and conditions of employment, so that we won't have this circumstance where we went 4 years with virtually zero change in our health insurance benefits, and then to roll out the greatest amount of change that we've ever had in one fell swoop. So we've set up a plan to avoid that in the future.
Okay, just quickly, again, if we would go keep Medicare where we have it, go to Medigap, how does that cost the state more money?
It's not as cost effective as moving to the Medicare Advantage plan because you're not leveraging the federal dollars.
Explain that. You're getting federal matches is what you're telling me?
You're getting a federal subsidy under a Medicare Advantage plan because you're...
Until you don't break even and you're going to have to raise money somewhere.
It's not a break even.
So in other words, you're guaranteeing full coverage from whatever the federal government's going to give you.
The insurance company gets the federal subsidy to offset the cost because you're rolling the member out of traditional Medicare.
And that contract's what, 3-4 years?
Which contract, sir?
With the company you're going to do Medicare Advantage with.
The,
or is that forever?
The bid will be for 5, but the federal subsidy isn't going. There's discussions, but there is no indication it's going away. And if it goes away, then we have the ability to terminate contracts and make other adjustments.
And that slips your clientele right back into Medicare.
It gives me some other options if the employer plan goes away.
Is Medicare sending me back to Medicare, is that one of your options?
It would be one of my options.
Okay.
If the plan goes away.
Follow up.
Okay. Senator Rose.
That actually was one of my questions. So if Medicare Advantage were to go down...
Okay.
What is the process for getting these folks back into Medicare?
We would have to terminate our plan.
And then, so you would have to terminate?
The Advantage plan. If we have an, again, if we
what
have
if
an Advantage
What if
plan?
Medicare's Advantage is terminated by the federal government?
Well, then we are not the only employer who has an issue.
Okay.
But there was speculation this year that they were going to decrease.
Correct.
And they actually increased. There was an article in Bloomberg just last Friday that growth is expected at a minimum through 2023 in these plans, at a minimum. There's actual speculation that in 2017 there'll be a new tax on Medigap plans. It's part of the 2013 federal budget. So no one can predict what Washington's going to do, but all of these products are being talked about rather free and loosely at the federal government level.
Okay. So if you terminate, they can go back in automatically?
We would have to do an enrollment. We would have to terminate at the end of, so we could have coordination
but
between our plans.
That's a qualifying event is my
Correct.
Point. Correct. Yeah, okay.
It's a qualifying event.
The second thing is, the current contract that's out there, is that it was a, wasn't it a 5-year contract or was it 1-year renewables or how is it structured?
Which, I'm sorry, which one,
the,
sir?
The current healthcare contract.
The Cigna contract or the managed care contract?
Managed care.
The managed care contracts are 5-year.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to bring these in then simultaneously? Because we're only near 2 of that. Or are you going to prospectively bail on the one you're in right now?
I'm not bailing on any of them because I don't have a single carrier that has a pure retiree base.
So, but you've got 3 years left, give or take, on the one you're in. You're trying to get this one up by January 1st of next year. Help resolve that coverage gap, or not a gap, actually, it's simultaneous coverage. What's the plan there? How do you get those back into one offering? Or is it in addition to?
It's a offering just for Medicare-eligible retirees, so there is no, I mean, you don't have the current managed.
So you're going to take them out of. So you're the people who are currently in.
The Medicare eligible retirees currently enrolled in one of the Medicare products or in quality care will be enrolled in a new product.
And that doesn't violate
January
the terms
1.
Of your current contract?
No. Members can change carriers. They can opt out. They can opt in. They can change at any point during the course, the term of that contract. The Cigna contract and the managed care contracts don't run on the same time frame.
Last thing to, I'm sorry, sir, what was your name?
Rob Craddock.
Yeah, Mr. Craddock.
Yes.
Last thing, in your laundry list of people that you're talking about for this working group,
yes.
Don't forget the retirees, because quite frankly, the retirees are the ones that have the most to lose in this, and I think by and large they sort of feel that they were left out of the contract that's currently pending. So I would just point that out. Thank you.
Can I respond to that, sir, just on one point? And hopefully the gentleman and the woman behind me will attest to this. We had regular and routine meetings between myself and the retiree groups about where we were going with retiree health care during the course of the union negotiations.
Janice, I appreciate that, but so much of what happens in Springfield under the dome here, when you get back to Pinfield, Illinois, it's a little bit different story. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your reference to Pinfield, Illinois. If you will stay around, I think we might have some follow-up questions later, but we would like to move on to...
Idesdale, is that better?
Sure. They're both good towns. But we would like to make sure that the retiree associations have an opportunity to ask some questions. So if we can keep these questions brief, we'll ask some of the retiree associations and then be around for some more follow-ups.
My question is if I'm understanding correct, is there anything that structurally prohibits retaining the ability of the retirees to make a choice between Medicaid Advantage and Medicaid Gap, to put that on them to make their own decision?
There's nothing that structurally prohibits it if we make both of those plan designs available under the procurement. We're looking at both options as fully insured products.
So we could go forward and offer the retirees both.
We can look at it under the procurement, yes, ma'am, but it will be determined upon what the value is both for the retirees and for the state.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. We have one clarification before we move on. Senator Severson.
Just a couple quick things. Number one, there was the concern about if Medigap goes away. It's moving from Medigap to our MedAdvantage. Moving to Advantage to Medicare or back and forth is not a significant problem. In the private sector, they do it every year with their open choices in the private sector. So if for some reason Medigap, the feds change their mind, that wouldn't be the employees wouldn't see a change in their benefits. It's just the financing would be switched to a self-funded or a Medigap type coverage versus a MedAdvantage.
It's not quite as simple as moving from a carrier like we have now, but it is not impossible to do, particularly if we find that we need to terminate a plan. If we terminate the plan, then yes.
And then the other their question is if the benefits are going to be the same and the premiums are being paid at the same, we wouldn't need to have to be talking about offering a Advantage HMO and a Advantage passive, because the if your benefits are the same, you wouldn't need to have a restrictive network. And so the simplest thing that they're talking about for anyone, any retiree in any of these legislative districts, any retiree can be told they're going to have, as of now, the same benefits they had, and they can go to any doctor they want to go to. It doesn't get much simpler than that. They're not losing a doctor, and they're not losing benefits. And so it's, from their standpoint, that's not, that's, they should not be concerned about losing a doctor or losing benefits.
That's correct. As long as their provider takes Medicare, they don't have an issue. We do find historically for our retirees that they become accustomed to a certain carrier, and so they think they must have that carrier without understanding that any carrier would give them access to that same Medicare provider.
Right.
But they're just so used to, well, this is just who I've always had, that they think that if they don't have that, then something is going to be drastically different for them, and that's simply not the case.
And then you can't, are you saying that you cannot go to the street until 1515 passes, or can you still go to the street without that?
We can go to the street without 1515, but because we need to know what steps under the code we have to go through, I mean, we can go and just assume we're bound by the code, and that's the process we're moving towards. But as we've been asked to answer questions, I've been hesitant to essentially pull the trigger on that to allow that to go to the street.
But you're preparing for that just in
Absolutely.
Case things get held up, you can be moving it.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Okay, one more question. This is the last question of you before we have a chance to come back, and then the retiree associations are ready to come forward after this.
So if the retiree accesses a doctor who's not in the network, and it sounds like that's very few people who would do that, who pays for that?
As long as the doctor takes Medicare, the rule is they have to go to a provider that's Medicare.
So that's what the network is, somebody who takes Medicare.
Well, the carrier we choose may have has a network, so that doctor may take a reduced reimbursement or something a little bit different, so that's an advantage on the cost. But from the member standpoint, it's absolutely seamless. They don't see it. As long as their doctor takes Medicare, which is what they do right now. If we have retired members who are enrolled in Health Alliance,
mm-hmm.
Quality Care, anything, they go to whichever doctor they go to, and the question they ask is, do you take Medicare?
Medicare.
The answer is yes. They go to the doctor, and we coordinate the benefit behind.
And then it's 90-10.
Right now, it's 100%. Beginning July 1, it'll be 90-10. But the out-of-network will matter July 1. It'll be 60-40.
And so what you're saying is there are very few you mentioned 3.2%. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this, that the out-of-network simply means a doctor who does not take Medicare.
No, the out-of-network means a doctor who's not in the current Quality Care network. Our Medicare-eligible retirees are not going to doctors who don't take Medicare, because then they'd be paying their cost, because Medicare
right.
wouldn't be covering it, and neither would we.
Okay.
Okay, you can disregard previous statements by co-chair of the commission. Would the clerk please make sure that Senator Trotter is added to the roll? He has one last question, and then I'm going to turn it over to co-chair Tracy to call up the annuitant association, retiree associations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And then I apologize for coming in late. And you may have already answered the question. This whole conversation, this whole dialogue is about savings to the state. I know when we first started this conversation, we talked about $100 million in savings. With this passive network, are we still going to realize $100 million in savings to the state? How does that work?
My latest estimate is $108 million.
Okay. How does that work? How does the savings come into play? Who's paying these folks? What is the reimbursement to that? How does that work, if you can, briefly?
Sure. It's approximately $28 per member per month in medical delivery savings, which is coordination, what we talked about, disease management, coaching, wellness, things of that nature that you get in a Medicare Advantage that you don't get in traditional Medicare. Earlier I explained that you have it's managed care, but it's not managed care. It's care management on a Medicare Advantage, where traditional Medicare is fee-for-service. The doctor does this service, and Medicare pays the bill based upon the service. There's no conversation between Medicare and the member about what they could be doing or what kind of care management could be in place. The pharmacy discount is a change. We moved from a retiree drug subsidy to an employer group waiver program with a formulary wrap. That's worth approximately $30 per member per month. Coordination of benefits, which is the reimbursements that we receive, is approximately $48 per member per month. And then the design changes that we've talked about down in the front for fiscal year 14 that would still be applicable, the deductibles and the coinsurance at 90-10, that's an additional $8 per member per month. So it works out to be about $116 per member per month, which coordinates into roughly $108 million for the plan.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Now we have the retiree insurance, the retiree groups come to the table, and we have witness slips.
Yeah, so I think we have the State University Annuitant Association, State Employees Retirees and System, and then the Illinois State Employees Association Retirees. And if you could all identify yourselves before you make some opening remarks.
Good morning. I'm Linda Bruckhart, the Executive Director of the State University's Annuitants Association, better known as SUAA.
Good morning. I'm Richard Carlson. I'm a board member of the Retired State Employees Association, and I'm retired Assistant Director of Insurance from 1981 to 1989 and Executive Director of the State SHIP Program from 1989 to 2002.
Good morning. My name is Tom Ryder. I represent the Illinois State Employees Association Retirees. Linda, you're first.
Okay. Please proceed, Ms. Rupkart.
Thank you. I want to thank Representative Jill Tracy and Senator Frerichs and the Commission for hearing my testimony. As many of you know, SUAA represents individuals who are either participating in or beneficiaries of the State University's retirement system. Our focus today is on those who are not only Medicare eligible, but also age eligible and enrolled in the federally sponsored health insurance program. It is our understanding that through contract negotiations between AFSCME and Central Management Services, it has been decided that rather than retirees enrolling in Medicare, our members will be forced into a state-sponsored Medicare plan or a choice of such plans. And those already in Medicare will be forced to make the switch. We also understand that while the coverage of these plans is not available as yet, we can only fairly testify on the idea rather than the coverage of the said proposed plans. Since 1986, employers affiliated with CSRS have been withholding 1.45% of the employee's salary in order for these employees to participate in Medicare upon turning age 65. The employer has also been contributing the same amount for each employee. As of this year, 2013, that is 27 years and a total contribution of 2.90 per gross salary for each state employee. As most everyone is aware, Medicare is very much a viable health insurance system for retirees. Many experts say that the benefits of state-sponsored Medicare plans are not as rich. While my not having any experience, I can't attest to that as yet. Therefore, it would be our suggestion that another choice be made available for Medicare age-eligible enrollees. Allow those eligible the choice of staying with Medicare and including a state-sponsored supplement as is currently provided in addition to the state-sponsored Medicare plans. Having paid both employer and employee into a system that is no longer available to state retirees is just another infringement among the many proposed changes being made through pension reform. Going forward with only state-sponsored Medicare plans will cause much confusion, along with additional loss of trust from those who are now depending on the state during their retirement. Because of the problems being created, a consideration should also be made for those who are currently paying into Medicare. Again, both employer and employee pay a total of 2.90% of gross salary. Has there been any consideration given to those who are currently paying into Medicare? Will they be satisfied with a state-sponsored plan? We ask that there be a reconsideration for those who are either Medicare enrolled and those who will be Medicare eligible. If the state-sponsored Medicare plans need to be pursued, then we ask that you please allow the additional choice of staying with Medicare with the state-supported supplement as currently provided. We believe that this is the right decision to make. I extend my appreciation to COGFER for holding this hearing today. Thank you.
I will try to supplement what Linda's just said, because we agree with what she has just outlined. The state retirees have not paid the percentage of their salary as part of their pension contribution, but there are a large number of retirees. While we were actively working, if you remember in the appropriations, there's a line item for group insurance. For anybody that's paid on anything other than a general revenue appropriation, the agency pays about twice the actual cost of providing that insurance to the group insurance trust fund. And that has 100% load in it. That was, at the time, I was told as an agency director that that was to cover the future costs for retiree health insurance. So what we are here today to talk about is, as an association, we're not opposed to the introduction of a Medicare Advantage plan for state retirees, but we want it to be, we don't want to have a mandatory privatization of our coverage. We want the ability to be able to choose it as one of the options that we currently have. There are a number of retirees that live out of state or spend a portion of the year out of state that are deeply concerned about being forced off of Medicare without choice, and we want the option of being able to continue to pick one of the existing plans, be it Quality Care or one of the HMOs. The Janice talked about access to providers. That works fine as long as you have that ability to go to a provider. But what the term she used was care management. If that constitutes case management, like using a nurse to encourage people to go to a doctor or to be able to take certain medications, a number of things, the wellness thing, a number of the things they're talking about are good for the Medicare beneficiaries and for the state. But if they're talking about having a primary care physician as the managed care, where you have to get a referral or approval by that primary care physician before you can go to any of those other providers to be able to, as an example, if there's a serious problem that is that they can't find, your doctor is unable to determine what's causing the symptoms that you're experiencing, and you want to go to Mayo Clinic, right now with Medicare, even with the changes that are taking place July 1st, we can go to Mayo Clinic. Medicare will pay 80% of it, and today the state would pay the other 20%. The problem is that Mayo Clinic has dropped out of the Cigna network because of the slow pay of our claims being paid. But nevertheless, you'd still end up having a 40% penalty on 20% of the bill. If we don't have access to these providers, even with the 90% copay, it's a serious problem, particularly for people that travel or spend a good part of the year out of state. The other thing that I wanted to address is we've kind of glossed over, I think Representative Poe referenced it, the changes that are taking place July 1st are not insignificant. The introduction of a $350 deductible for people that are on Medicare is new. Right now, whatever the state plan benefits are provided, whatever Medicare pays is subtracted, and the state pays the balance. So we've got zero out-of-pocket expenses similar to what you would have with the Plan F Medicare supplement plan that Representative Poe was talking about. Starting July 1st, we will have to satisfy a $350 deductible before we get dollar one in benefits. Now, there are approximately 60,000 state retirees that are on Medicare, and I'm not sure what the number of dependents, but it's about half of that. So if you've got 90,000 state retirees and dependents who are on Medicare, and you multiply that times $350, that alone is over $30 million in savings. The other changes that are taking place in terms of the imposition of the copays for in-network and out-of-network, those are going to produce other additional substantial savings, not to mention that the introduction of all of these changes are going to have an impact on utilization, because deductibles for inpatient hospitalization and use of emergency room, that's going to change behavior on the part of retirees as to how they seek their medical care. Some of this is good for the state. Some of this is good for management of the plan. But bottom line is, as Linda said, we want the option. We don't want to be told that we are required to give up our existing coverage under Medicare. If this is offered as part of a cafeteria of plans where, because of the difference in benefits or premiums, it makes sense for a retiree, they can save money, then that's fine. Let them sign up for that. But don't require us to every one of us to be arbitrarily put into this private plan. The other thing that I wanted to address that we're very concerned about as far as 1515 is concerned, when Janice was testifying, she said that we're concerned that ultimately whatever plan they put on the street, they RFP and they get responses, there needs to be an appeal process for how they award this plan. There needs to be legislative oversight by this commission as to whatever is adopted. That's what protects us in the end, is because if we don't like what they're doing, we've got the ability to talk to each one of you and to this commission, and you've been very effective in protecting our benefits over the years. I mean, we understand there are changes that have to be made, but to arbitrarily and without appeal and without legislative oversight implement these changes, we're very scared. I think I'll defer. Oh, the last thing I was going to talk about is late payment of our bills. I mean, right now, it's probably not as big an issue in Springfield, because the two hospitals in Springfield Clinic are, I think Springfield Clinic alone is owed $40 million. But they seem to be working with retirees and not causing a hassle for us. But if you get out of this area where there isn't a high concentration of state retirees, the payment of our claims for up to a year later, we are getting, particularly from anesthesiologists and radiologists and other providers, we're getting dunned for the copays. And as long as it's 20% of the total bill and it ends up being $45 or $50, I suppose we can handle it. But in your report that you put out earlier this spring on the liabilities of the group insurance plan, you've got the list of all the things that constitute the total liability. The last line is administration, interest, and other. And I'll tell you, from 5 years, 2009, that cost was $18 million. For fiscal 14, it's projected to be $90 million. You know, if that backlog of bills could get paid and you could reduce that interest charge, you could save as much money doing that as all the changes that are being discussed here today.
Mr. Ryder, and then we'll proceed to questions.
Thank you. I represent the Illinois State Association of Retirees. We have about 6,000 members. Our members were not AFSCME. They were primarily SERS, a few scattered retired legislators, and some retired judges. We want to thank the commission because this is the first time we've had a public forum as an opportunity to talk about what's being projected to be done to us. So we thank you for that opportunity. I also wish to thank CMS. Probably didn't expect that. We have had regular meetings with CMS since last year, at which time we've been talking with Janice and others about what was projected, what was possible under the various plans. It's of no disrespect to CMS that Medicare Advantage was only discussed in our last meeting. And the reason that that was discussed is because it was part of the AFSCME contract. We're not part of AFSCME, but they negotiated on our behalf. We now have to face the choices that are forced upon us by someone who did not represent us during our active working life and does not represent us now. But we have to face the consequences of that. But I do want to give a special thanks to Janice and to CMS. We're on a first-name basis, and the transparency and the conversation during those heretofore private meetings has been most helpful. So what is it that we seek? Options. Opportunities to make choices. I would love that retirees could only talk about health care. That would be nice. But retirees have to think about health care in the context in which they're going to exist next year and the year after. And that includes changed programs. That's a July 1st. That includes paying for those changed programs. And interestingly, paying not based on the cost of the program, but on the amount that you receive. And that's just July 1st. It is entirely possible that if either of the two retirement or pension plans discussed in the House or the Senate, or a combination thereof, would have immense further complications to those in the retirement area. And the one consistent thread that we hear from all of those retirees is that we hear they want choices. They want opportunities. If you're on a fixed income and you don't have the ability to go back to work and you have a health condition, then you'd like choices. You'd like to be able to deal with this as you can. We are concerned that the Medicare Advantage program, which rightfully indicates a savings, and I believe that there would be a savings, it's the savings that's driving the program, not necessarily the care, and certainly not the options that would be available to those who have to receive that care. So what may occur? We don't know. Certainly one of the consequences could be that if you're looking at a percentage of your annuity going towards health care, you'll make a dollars and cents cost risk analysis. And if you're relatively healthy, you have no prior existing conditions, and that's not a big thing under Medicare in any event, then you may find that those folks who are paying the largest amount of money which is to say the 2% generates the largest amount of money, will simply say no thank you. Will stay on a Medicare program and seek to purchase their own supplement plans. And it's a very competitive market in that regard. So what does that mean? That means that those who are contributing the most to the system opt out, take those dollars, spend it someplace else. Those who are the healthiest opt out, choose to go someplace else. That leaves within the system those who have a more modest retirement, or those who can't leave because of coverage issues, or don't wish to leave because of coverage issues. So you have a population that's not contributing as much and a population that may be demanding more in the way of services. And perhaps it is that CMS and those folks to whom the RFP would be issued have considered that and have factored that into their discussions, and that that is included in the $100 million savings, but perhaps not. Retirees have to consider all these things when they make the decisions. And on their behalf, it's my pleasure to lobby for that group. On their behalf, we simply ask for options. Give them opportunities to make decisions. We won't. The retirees won't like to do that. They would like, they do not care for change. They would like things to remain consistent, but that's not possible in our state's economic circumstance. The result is we simply ask for options. And I truly do appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Okay, first we have Senator Trotter for questions, followed by Senator Severson and Rose, and then Neckritz.
Thank you very much. My question has been answered, and thank you very much, Leader Ryder, for, as always, simplifying things for me. What it was confusing about 15 minutes ago, you certainly articulated what I've been trying to figure out, how these options are going to work, and again, where the savings are. So thank you very much. My question has been answered at this point.
Great. Then we have Senator Severson.
Thank you. I think I understand, certainly understand some of the confusion, Linda, from your, from the questions that you've raised. Rick, I think some of the things we covered, I think you know better than some of the statements you're making that I think just aren't realistic. And you've dealt with this a long time, too, to understand that. There is, in a passive network, there is no switching out of network. There is no being pushed out of network. There is no not seeing any provider. There is not seeing Mayo or Cleveland Clinic. Under a passive network, you can go to any one of those doctors. You don't have to have a referral. You're not forced out of there. No one's even mentioning that fact with that. If you're talking about a Medicaid HMO, or if you're talking about an HMO Advantage product, that would be one thing. But in the passive network, that's not the case. So I hope it's clear that what they are talking about in one of the options, and there could be two or three, but the one option they're talking about is every retiree sees the exact same doctor they're seeing now. They're going to pay the exact same premium that's been the 1%, and they're going to have the exact same deductibles and copays. I don't know. It really can't be less confusing. It's, if you don't like the deductibles and copays, that's part of the plan. So no matter what plan you go to, our current self-funded plan, or this, the plan design is set in negotiations.
Maybe you can help us. I was reacting to Janice's comment about care management.
Right, but there's a big difference between care management and in managed care, which you have under HMO. What they're talking about is the simple thing, which we want, that if you have a retiree that's suffering from diabetes, you have a nurse that calls and says, how can we help you better control that? We want to get you in to see your doctor. You haven't seen a doctor for a year. Let's go see a doctor. Here are some classes that you can go take. Here are some websites to get more information. It's not dictating. That's what an HMO would do.
Yeah. I agree. That's my understanding of what case management is. But what I was concerned about is she was referring to care management where the physician, and I haven't gotten anybody to say that this won't be coordinated by a primary care physician and that you won't have to get referrals. Because I will tell you, I've dealt with friends and alike who've been currently in a Medicare Advantage program.
But the Medicare Advantage plan, see, that's where this is not the traditional Medicare Advantage plan. It's only Advantage plan in its funding, not in its design. Okay. So if you believe the contract that the design is set by, you know, by the legislation, the design is set by the negotiations, so the deductible, the copays, what that is set, and it's any provider that's taken care of. And there isn't going to be the issue of late payments and doctors not taking it, because under fully insured, just like it is under an HMO, the insurance carrier takes that risk. You won't have that problem of doctors saying, we're not going to take you because we're not getting paid. It's the carrier that's on the hook. Yeah. Under these issues.
I agree, but we have yet to see anything in writing that guarantees us. I will tell you, a number of our members, and I agree, you know, as you age, you know, and you get to be 75, 80, even, we've got one member that's on our board that's 95. They've been on Medicare a long time. They're scared to death about giving up their existing Medicare coverage.
Well, they're not really giving up Medicare coverage. It is. The coverage, no, Medicare is going to the Medicare coverage
is
going
to the carrier.
It's privatization,
and it's being covered by a private
right.
insurance
But will
company.
That retiree see any benefit difference?
We don't know.
Until
we see the plan design.
The plan design is set by contract. It's the same, whether either one.
In the end, I mean, when Jan was talking about what they're going to seek proposals for, the three, Medicare Advantage HMO, a Medicare Advantage PPO, and a Medicare supplement, just because they receive proposals doesn't mean they'll award contracts based on those three options. And that's why we want this ultimately. If it comes back here and this commission approves the plan design and says it's in the best interest of all of us,
the
you
RFP
know, then we're,
has
we're,
to be the RFP has to be what it's been negotiated. So the coverages, what the copays are, the deductibles, that's already been set.
Senator,
that's what the RFP is going to state. If they come back with a plan that's totally different than what the RFP is, they're not going to accept that. We won't accept it.
Well,
that's part of the contract.
But as Tom said,
that option.
Plan. Yeah.
Who doesn't have that option?
Tell me where it says that it comes back to COGFA for approval.
There's a contract. It has to come back to what the Ask Me contract was agreed to.
Comes back to COGFA?
No, it goes to the law. If that's what they've negotiated,
Senator, you and I agree on that. That's clearly what the law says. But there are, because of the rapidity with which you have asked CMS to meet what I consider to be impossible deadlines, the kind of work that CMS is doing is yeoman's work. We may disagree on the substance, but the effort that they're putting forth and the deadlines that they have to meet, I've already indicated, are well nigh impossible. But Senate Bill 1515, and the content on that, the decision remains with CMS. I don't see the oversight, and I would love for you to point that out to me.
No, I would love
I just
to
don't
see.
I just don't see the oversight there, and that concerns us. When someone suggests to me, I'm going to give you a policy that's just as good as a previous one, but it costs less, you understand why that might raise some concerns on our part. And when the cost less is the savings.
All right. It costs less, but
and the part where it says trust us is for an 80-year-old on fixed income that's facing tremendous confusions. And I would also indicate, at least at this point, the cost for this for those retirees who have Medicare opportunities. The 1% is only 1 year. That's a teaser rate. The 2% is the rate that would be locked in at a minimum for the future.
But at 2%, as you know, if a person's got a retirement of $50,000, 2% is going to be $1,000, less than $100 a month. You could not go anywhere in the world and buy Medicare supplement coverage and prescription coverage for
you
them.
And I agree on that.
So there's not going to be this migration out of people running to the private sector, especially
I
when
think
you have
the
a
migration
plan
that I described
doctor.
The migration that I described is those folks who are healthy and have healthier annuities, which are the ones that would be contributing the most. They are not the most numerous within the retired state pool or cohort. We agree on that. But it does change the demographic of those that are left behind. And it's just a possibility.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're debating two different things. But the issue about having the oversight or what happens to pre-65 retirees or what happens July 1st to January 1, those are all issues of concern. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to debate or really talk about is just the post-65 retiree plans that are going to kick in potentially January 1 or February, whenever that's going to get done. That's really the one we're looking at. And always they're going to bring back different quotes or different options from Advantage plans to Advantage HMOs to Medigap plans. And then they're going to look at those to make a decision. I think the point that we're trying to make is the scare tactic of saying that Advantage plans are going to be limiting what doctors you have. You're going to have more co-pays. You're not going to get coverages. It's not going to be as good. And that is, we shouldn't be scaring retirees because that's not what is going to, that's not going to happen.
Senator, on behalf of the association that I have the pleasure to lobby for, we don't have to scare them. They're already there.
If we could move on.
It's just a process. Thank
Senator,
you. I apologize.
Senator,
for taking.
Well, no. Senator, have you finished?
Yes, I think I covered it.
Okay, if we could move on to Senator Rose.
Thanks. There are two different issues for those following at home. The first issue, as I get it, is Senate Bill 1515 and whether this commission should give up its oversight of whatever CMS does. The second issue that you're proposing is you want the choice option of also having regular Medicare be retained. Is that everybody's nodding their heads? We don't have to answer it for the record. But right, got it. Okay. So, and to Janice, and again, I do agree. I mean, Janice is very accessible, and I appreciate the fact, Leader Ryder, that you mentioned that. But it is this whole conversation right here speaks to my original point about confusion and the lack of information. I've read through the retirees' document, and they're talking about, you know, being able to charge different out-of-pocket costs. That's not true because it's being governed by the AFSCME contract. And Janice is nodding her head, as is, and I'm sorry, sir, I've never met you. Rick, okay. So, I mean, this speaks to the confusion that's out there. You know, the deductible issue, again, is in your document, but it's set by the AFSCME contract. So it's not going to change based upon the AFSCME contract. Now, what is interesting, and I am interested in knowing, is something that Leader Ryder just talked about. Is the option that these people are seeking, was it given away in the AFSCME contract? Or is it even possible to do what they're suggesting? Janice, you're shaking. You want to come up here and say which it is? Because, I mean, let's be clear here. The governor and AFSCME went in and made a deal. And they made a deal that affects a whole lot of people in this state and a lot of my constituents. And the governor and AFSCME made a deal that has a lot of my constituents pretty upset. So I want to know in that deal, which still isn't publicly available for viewing months later. Is it a month later? What is it?
The contract was just ratified last Friday.
Right. When was it set? 2 months ago now? A month and a half ago now?
Right. But it wasn't ratified till last Friday, so it's not a releasable document.
Okay. Whatever. The point is nobody can really answer all these questions, but I want to know in that document, is what these people are asking for even available, or did AFSCME give that away too?
It's safe. The safest situation here is for me to be between Ms. Brookhart and Mr. Ryder as opposed to next to Mr. Craddock. The AFSCME contract specifically speaks to Medicare Advantage. However,
the only section of the Group Insurance Act that is excluded from the ramifications of the Public Labor Relations Act is Section 5, which is where our ability to procure rests. So,
what does that mean?
It means that there is no bargaining of Section 5 procurement. The AFSCME contract does say Medicare Advantage, and by releasing an RFP that includes Medicare Advantage as an option,
okay,
I believe we're meeting our responsibilities under the AFSCME contract.
Okay.
Go ahead. Senator, can I add on a couple of things? Number one, the AFSCME changes to all the to the contract, and as well as all the group insurance provisions negotiated out of that contract, are available on the CMS website. We gave copies of such to all four leaders' staff on Friday, and so it's
after the ratification.
As soon as we received notice that it was ratified.
Well, it's Monday, and it hasn't made its way down to me. So,
okay.
All right.
And then also, there is nothing that prohibits us from giving more benefits than what are set out in the collective bargaining agreement. And if we gave an additional option, such as the Medicare supplemental plan, we can do that. What we're obligated contractually to do is to provide a Medicare Advantage plan.
Okay.
But we can add on to that as well.
Okay.
So there's no problem there.
And then two last just technical questions here. There was a discussion about approval of primary care physician, and it's brought up in this, and you were shaking your head back in the back there. What is it and what isn't it?
If we were to have a Medicare Advantage HMO product, which is a product we're asking about in the procurement, then yes, it will work just like an HMO, where you have to have a primary doctor and that doctor has to give you the referrals in order to seek treatment. That is not care management under Medicare Advantage PPO. Care management, and that's why I said, I'll use the term care management, but I hate because it sometimes gets confused with managed care. I made that statement in my comments earlier today. It is merely the ability to do exactly what Senator Severson explained. You're reaching out, you're assisting, you're moving towards a wellness piece potentially. So you can call it case management, you can call it care management, you can call it care coordination. It is something more than here's the bill, Medicare pay it.
Let me peel back these layers a little bit here. There are some of the HMOs currently offered by the state of Illinois that you do not have to get a primary care physician for referral.
Not a fully insured HMO. There are managed care products offered that do not require a primary referral.
Right.
But a fully insured HMO product.
Okay. I don't know. I just know that my guy, I don't have to get a referral. So is there still that going to be offered when all this is done?
That you don't have to get a referral?
If we
have a...
I mean, some of them you require that, some of them
Medicare Advantage that. PPO with a passive network by his nature requires no referral.
Okay. So for the people that are in no referral now, they will be able to find a place that's no referral.
They merely can... Yeah, any Medicare provider.
Okay. Then the last question, I think it was Raymond originally rose this point and then got asked by, I think, Senator Severson. On the issue of non-payment via Cigna and people getting drug into, you know, collections, small claims court, and everything else, if you get moved to Medicare Advantage or Medigap or whatever, and we don't pay that bill on time, what happens?
The risk lies with the fully insured vendor, as was pointed out. The fully insured vendor has the option to pay or not to pay their providers based upon how we pay. I will tell you that we have certain fully insured vendors right now that are current with their providers, even though we are horrifically behind
on what
we pay them.
And by the way, part of these savings is how you get caught up in that and also save interest expense, as was brought up. But that's my point. If you choose Company X and Company X doesn't pay Dr. Y, Dr. Y is still sending patient A to collections.
It's a fully insured product. Patient A, the state doesn't owe the doctor the money. The state owes the carrier the money.
Right.
As opposed to Cigna right now, where truly we don't owe Cigna the money.
But it doesn't stop
we
everybody
owe the
from
carrier.
Hauling these people into collections.
Well, I would be hard-pressed to believe that we have members who are going to a fully insured managed care plan who are being sent to collections.
They're I'm talking about Cigna and Cigna.
Well, but that's a self-insured product.
And Cigna's being, and that was, but that was, Janice, that's my
right.
question.
Yes, that's a self-insured, so you're
going to I want to make sure if you're going to Medicaid Advantage that those people aren't going to end up in collections like the Cigna people are.
It's a fully insured product, so right, it works differently. So, and I want to make one clarification.
I'm just asking questions.
Okay. I just want to make one clarification, though, on this conversation about this commission's role. And I'm not going to argue about self-insured versus fully insured. But the only thing 1515 does is give us relief from the 30-day waiver, which historically we've asked for in writing and gotten. But 1515 as it relates to this commission – merely says we're not bound by the 30-day waiver provision. It does not say anything more about this commission's role in group health insurance. It merely talks to the 30-day waiver. So I just want to make sure everybody's clear on that. That's all 1515 says about this commission. This is not an attempt by any stretch of the imagination. I would, you know, this is my dream to be in front of you all of the time. It is by no attempt to get around from this commission. It is merely the 30-day waiver language. That's it.
Okay, now we have Leader Neckritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up on something that Senator Rose suggested in his comments and in his questions. You speak very much to wanting options. But yet I've heard testimony that those options are currently being taken away because of our failure to pay. And our failure to pay is clearly tied to the backlog of bills, to the rising pension costs, to all the other issues that affect our budget. Things, and so we can't continue to just say no to every change because it's going to impact somebody in some way that they don't quite understand. And so to me, the status quo is an option, but it's limiting options right now. You said that. So these are the kinds of things I think we have to continue to explore to say, you know, and allowing people to opt out so that we don't achieve the savings that are going to be suggested under the Medicare Advantage plan, to me, is not an option. I mean, we have to find savings and we have to make changes to these programs in order to be able to get ourselves current and get ourselves out of this mess.
Thank you. I have one more question that I would like to ask, and it's probably Janice perhaps will have the question. But the Medicare-eligible retired employees that were in TRIP and community college employees in SIP, SIP, were never actually state employees. And so what I'm wondering is are these employees covered by group insurance provisions of AFSCME's contract?
The short answer is no. But the procurement piece for those groups is driven by Section 5, and their plan design now is substantially different than the plan design for the state employees. But I can tell you that in the communications that went out to members for SIP and TRIP, it says they may be required, and the reason it says they may is because they have different rules with regard to access and how they pay premium. And so given everything that's going on, I don't anticipate rolling this product out to SIP and TRIP on January the 1st. I don't anticipate not ever rolling it out, but particularly for the TRIP plan because their premiums differ depending on whether or not managed care is available, accessible where they live. I've got to do some more digging legislatively and some more discussions with the TRIP Advisory Board about what a Medicare Advantage product would mean for them.
Okay, so since they're governed by separate boards, then we've talked a lot about options, and I'm assuming then that they will still have the option.
They pay significantly more than the state employee, and yes, they have those right now. For fiscal year 14, they'll have those options available. SIP does not have a board. TRIP does.
So then they would have that option to choose between Medigap and Medicaid Advantage. They're kind of separate from this.
Well, I'm not even talking about putting them out there as a mandatory at this point, even rolling them into this procurement at this point. I'm
okay.
Talking about leaving them sitting where they are, at least for the moment, and then rolling them to this product. Once we roll them, and I use that term, I hate to use that term, once we make this product available, no, it would not be our intent to say you can have current TCHP or you can have Medigap or you can have Medicare Advantage. The way that we manage it for the state plan would be the way that we push it out for all of the other plans.
Thank you. Thank you very much, panel. And now we do have some other interest groups, I believe, that want it. You have the.
Yeah, I think I read the table.
At 3 is when we are.
We went in.
We've got 5 minutes.
Okay, we have John Corrigan, Brad Donaldson, Frank Bryant, and Trevor Klatfelter. Gentlemen, thank you. And if you'd each state your name for the record and then give a statement in the order that you're seated there.
Brad Donaldson with Insurer Price.
Frank Bright of Insurer Price.
Hi, John Corrigan on behalf of Extend Health.
And Trevor Klatfelter with Insurer Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for giving us the opportunity to come up here and speak. There is a lot of confusion on this issue, and we're going to do our best to clear up some things. First, let us start by saying that we operate what are called Medicare exchanges. I know it has a weird connotation and CMS is afraid of it, but basically what we do is we operate as an enrollment portal. That's what we do. What's really concerned me, at least, is that while there's a lot of talk saying, let's go ahead and we'll give everyone these options, they don't really talk about the actual other options. They're focusing primarily on creating, and we're emphasizing creating, a specialized Medicare Advantage program. That doesn't even exist yet. I mean, contractually, it does not exist. It just, you haven't gone and built it yet. Now, one of the things that's really concerning to us is that there's a focus on what those benefits will be in comparison to their current benefits, effective July 1st, for their retirees. Now, the state retirees will still have a good, effective July 1st, will still have a decent retiree health plan. But the bottom line is it's not as good as a Medicare Supplement Plan F with a drug plan. You cannot get any better than 100% coverage anywhere in the nation to any doctor or hospital you want. Now, the gentleman in the far back, I asked a really great question earlier. I'm sorry, I didn't have time to jot down your name, which was how much it's going to save the state to go with a Medicare Advantage plan option, the EGWP or group waiver program. And the response was $108. $108 million. Well, with a Medicare Supplement Plan F, with the drug plans all added in, you're saving over $200 million. Not on top of that, too, you don't have any deductible. The $350 deductible is gone. You don't have the 10% copay for in-network. That's gone. And also, to the nice lady right there, I also wanted to note that I believe it was 40%. Penalty for 40% copay for out-of-network. Am I correct on that? If that's the case, according to testimony last week, the state ends up paying the difference on that if you stay with the quote-unquote passive PPO option. Well, that problem doesn't exist with a supplement plan either. So while you're saving over $200 million, you have 100% coverage for everybody. You don't have any problems with determining what is a creditable coverage for where or wherever you're actually going to be going, or if the state has to pay a penalty. The coordination of benefits is automated, so you don't have to worry about infusion drugs not being covered under the drug plan or if it's primary care. For example, infusion drugs are always an actual medical expense, paid at 100%. It is the simplest option. Now, we're not necessarily saying you should go with only it. It should be included in every step of the process. Your individual retiree should have an option of looking at what it does compared to what you guys are going to build and choosing it, if they choose. If everyone went with it, all 98,245 people, the state would save double of what it's projecting, at minimum, and have better coverage. And that's basically what we're saying right here. Now, one of the things that was left out, too, is that we already have an archetype in place for this working brilliantly, which is the state of Nevada. They were the first ones to do this, and they did a really good job. Now, also, one of the other concerns that was brought up was the penalty that's assessed for late payments, basically. I believe there's in some cases there's up to a 50-week delay in paying providers. Eliminated under Medicare with a supplement. There is a requirement to pay out within 8 days. So there wouldn't be that, I believe it's $90 million now or whatever they're saying as far as actual late payment penalties, gone. Everyone gets their money right away. Everyone gets whatever they need done right away. No referrals, no networks, no copays, no deductibles. So to satisfy Representative Poe's question, doesn't matter if you go on vacation. You don't even have to call and see if there's a doctor out there that'll take you. You don't even have to let them know you're going. You can go get whatever you want done right away and not pay anything out of pocket. So that's all I have. Anyone else?
Yes. Thanks, Brian. I represent Extend Health, and we are the company that did the exchange in Nevada. We had a lot of success. Just to give everyone a basic idea on the various choices, I know choice has been something that has been important to the retiree groups here opposed to Senate Bill 1515. When the dust settled after the exchange came through, there were 53 carriers that people had chosen, 337 different plans. 27% of folks in Nevada chose Medicare Advantage. 73% decided to stick with the Medicare and Medicare Supplement. The average cost for Medicare Advantage in Nevada was $17 a month. Here we just got quoted a price of $38 a month. So when you use the exchange model, you use competition to lower your costs and you maximize choice of not only insurance carriers and plans for the retirees, but you maximize the number of networks they're able to access. And when the retirees have choice, they tend to be the most happiest. We poll all of our retirees after they go through this transition, and 100 of the nation's Fortune 500 companies have done this. 9 out of 10 are very satisfied with the options they're given through Extend Health, through an exchange. Let me read you a little bit of some written testimony that I have already submitted. But in 2010, the Nevada Public Employees Benefit Program had approximately 12,000 Medicare-eligible retirees, both union and non-union. These retirees are offered either a group PPO or a group HMO, depending on where the retiree lived. In 2010, the state was dealing with a $3 billion shortfall in a $7 billion budget. Part of the shortfall was health care costs. $111 million gap between what the state could contribute and the amount required to maintain the current benefits at the same contribution ratio. If Nevada chose to remain with a group PPO HMO model, it would have needed to implement several changes to close that shortfall, and those changes fell on three main considerations: reduce benefits or eliminate benefits, increase participant premium cost sharing, or convert the self-funded preferred provider option PPO into a consumer-driven PPO high deductible plan. Each would hurt its retirees in a different way, and each had its own public relations risk. The first consideration, reducing retiree benefits, would have required the retirees to pay more when they saw the doctor, went to the hospital, or bought a prescription. For those who had the misfortune of getting sick or hurt, these trips to the doctor's office would be much more expensive. The second consideration increased the amount retirees contributed to the premium each month. The $112 million required cost savings would be spread across all retirees. Every retiree was going to have to feel some pain. The final
if I could, I mean, we have your statement. We'll put it in record.
Okay.
But we want to make sure we have all the questions answered. I appreciate that, but we will have your statement put in the record, and I have the opportunity to review it if you don't mind. I didn't mean to interrupt, but
thanks, Chairman, and happy to limit my comments to questions
okay.
from the committee.
Let's just open it to questions at this point in the interest of our time. Senator.
Thanks. Just a couple quick ones, because I think one, it's an option that's worth looking at, and I think the RFP is going to be including all of those options. The one question I had about the payment in 8 days, if the state doesn't pay the carrier for 6 months, is the carrier still going to pay all those claims? So if we don't pay our premiums for 6 months, is the carrier, do your carriers continue to pay those policies then, those claims?
Well, we've never encountered a corporation that would actually delay payment on premium for 6 months. In fact, okay.
So that's my, I guess my question is, if the premiums were not paid to the company for 6 months, would the company continue to pay all those claims for those individuals, or would they freeze the claims or freeze the policy or terminate the policy until the premiums were paid?
Well, it would depend on the actual leeway that the independent company was going to give you to pay off, if they ever thought that you might actually pay it and eventually. But they would have the option, if you hadn't had coordination with them, to just cancel the policies and terminate it. Now, would they do it? Who knows?
Or if it got to be 7 months or 8 months or 9 months. And so I think the problem is going to be the same either way. And it goes to the irresponsibility of the state not paying its bills, and that has to change. But it's going to be a problem no matter what. Either we tell the providers we're not going to pay you, but we'll give you interest, or we go to the insurance company and say, you know what, we can't pay it, but we'll give you interest if you keep paying the claims. But it's going to be a problem no matter what. So I think that was when I just want to make sure it was clear that the problems that we're having with the current fully insured plans, with the partially self-funded plan with Cigna, fully Cigna, is that the premiums aren't being paid. And that would be going to be the same if we go to a fully insured. If we don't pay the premiums, it's going to be a problem. So our goal is to make sure that doesn't happen. So,
I think that question really goes to how do you finance this program, and obviously that's part of the problem we have here is financing the program. What we can tell you is that from the dollars that we've looked at, there's way greater savings to be able to pay your bills, and that's part of the program. I don't think there's anything in this program that you're going to do that's going to solve all of your financial problems, and this is a piece of it. Will a carrier give you credit, and that's what we're talking about? Some will, some won't. Some will give you varying pieces of time. The contractual relationship, which I know you're all fully aware of. How far they'll take you, that's something really we can't answer on that behalf.
Of course, the problem is the state takes those savings and spend them elsewhere right away, and then you're only left with what's left, and then we don't pay those premiums.
Yeah. That's the problem on this side of the room.
So it's, but I just want to make sure, but again, we're looking, I think our goal in the RFP is going to be looking at all of the different options. To see what's going to be best with those.
And the one more thing I'd like to add too is in talking with AFSCME about their contract, and as I understand it, haven't seen it, but we were told that basically the medical benefit portion was to be an equivalent, and that really what they wanted was the same type and form of benefits that they currently have. So I didn't hear in our discussions with them that they were after Med Advantage plans. Maybe that's in there. Again, haven't seen that. But in this particular scenario of looking at this med subs with the drug premiums, we're actually getting an enhanced benefit. The last time we can go out there and actually increase somebody's benefits and save money, I don't think it's a real huge decision. So I think this certainly should be included. Sorry.
It sounds like it is. So that's,
thank you.
Again, we'll have a better idea once all those numbers come back from those different ideas. Thank you.
Okay. Members of the Senate are being called to the floor. We're going to have to wrap this committee meeting up. I know there have been a lot more questions. I think we continue the debate for a while here. I want to thank everyone for being part of this here today. But if there is nothing other for the business before the Commission on Government Forecasting Accountability, declare us adjourned. 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 Clear us adjourned. Clear us adjourned. Clear us adjourned. Clear us adjourned.